So shalom everyone. Welcome to Partners for Progressive Israel's strategic conversation with Akiva Eldar about the new project Save Israel, Stop the Occupation. Akiva Eldar is the chief political columnist of our monitor, Israel's Pulse. He was formerly senior columnist and editorial writer for Haaretz and served as the Hebrew Daily U.S. Bureau Chief and diplomatic correspondent. Akiva is also, and this is why he's with us, he's one of the founders or initiators of CISO, Save Israel, Stop the Occupation. Partners for Progressive Israel depends on your support. Though participation in this program is free, producing it is not. We kindly ask you for a suggested donation of $10. First, a few technical matters. This is not a usual conversation. It is an activist conversation. At the end of the call, we will create a discussion board in which interested parties would raise ideas about how to best pursue this project. If you're interested in participating in the discussion, email me at maya@progressiveisrael.org. Akiva, the stage is yours.
Hi, shalom everyone. Really happy to be with you. And as Maya just mentioned, it's not the regular conference call that I've been doing for many years with Americans for Peace Now, with J Street, New Israel Fund, and you name it. This is how we say tachlis. We are approaching the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War or the occupation, and the Israeli government is already working on a big rally that will probably start in June and will end in June 2017 under the title of Liberation of the Judea and Samaria. And of course, it will be, they will focus on the on Jerusalem. Now, CISO is actually working on the alternative 50th anniversary. And we will, of course, focus on 50 years of occupation. Keep in mind that Israel lived without the occupation only for 19 years. So when we speak about 50 years of occupation, most Israelis, and I think even most of the Jewish people who are not senile yet or are not too young to remember, don't know much about the occupation, and that it was actually very nice here before 67. I was a student in Jerusalem. I moved to Jerusalem in 66, and I just want to remind those of you who need argument about the ability to live without the territories and even feel safe, is that I was among very few Israelis who were conscripted in 64, who served in the army only 26 months before, just before the Six-Day War. The Israeli government felt that we can, that Israel can afford to reduce the conscription period, and this was without the territories, from 2.5 years to 26 months. And my son, who was born in the Yom Kippur War, of course, spent 3 years in the army. So this is just if you need more ammunition to argue about how the occupation or how the Six-Day War is adding more security to Israel or makes it Israel safer than it was before. Now, I guess that I don't have to feed you with more argument why we need to put an end to the occupation and to find the solution for the conflict. What I suggest that we will discuss, and I will try to bring up a few ideas and tell you what CISO is doing, is how we can move from a discourse to activism. And this is what we are trying to do in Israel, and we can't do this without you people in the United States. I'm sure that all of you participated in the APEX conference that my friend Gideon Levy called the Conference of the Enemies, and you were there to rally for Donald Trump. Actually, we already have our Donald Trump. His name is Bibi Netanyahu, and that makes us feel that we have something in common, and we have a common enemy, which is fascism, which is racism and bigotry. And so now you can have a taste of what we are drinking and eating here every day. I'm sure that you've been following the campaign against breaking the silence, and this is just the beginning. We know for sure that B'Tselem, Peace Now, the New Israel Fund has been there always, out there. What makes us feel a little bit better is that we, the liberal Israeli camp, the CISO people, and the majority of the Jewish community in the United States have now a common issue and common campaign, and this is putting Netanyahu in a very difficult position, and this is the issue of the Kotel and the status of the reform movement in Israel, and he will have to make a decision very soon. I believe that this is the reason, the real reason that he didn't show up in AIPAC, is that he knew that people will be from the reform movement will be standing there with flyers and will make it very uncomfortable for him, because even among the leaders of AIPAC, as some of them I know, have been standing under a reform chuppah. So this maybe gives us access to the mainstream Jewish community that will feel that this is not only about the occupation. It's not only about settlement. It's about our identity as liberal Jewish people, as, if you like, Zionist, but you don't have to be a Zionist to be liberal, and vice versa. So, you know, I was doing, for the last 3 years, I was also the CEO of Haaretz Peace Conference in Israel, and I'm sure some of you participated in the conference in New York or in Palo Alto. And I decided that two conferences is more than enough, that a conference is a very nice thing to do with our peace supplement that I hope some of you or all of you had the opportunity to give a look at and to write articles. But it's not one shot, and wait for another conference next year. What we are looking at is a campaign that will start, as I said, in June, June 4th, in a rally or in a petition that will be published here in Israel and the United States, signed by the most prominent Jewish and Israeli authors, scientists, Nobel laureates, journalists, musicians, people that we of course cannot ignore, but the mainstream Israelis and even Netanyahu will be very embarrassed and very uncomfortable to see their names in an ad saying Israel needs to end the occupation. And actually, I was even thinking today when I spoke to my good friend Danny Bartal, who has devoted his life to see, so this is the only thing that he's been doing, is that actually we should maybe even speak in the language that they speak, which is we are the IDF, we are Tzva Hagana Israel, we are defending Israel, we are not defending the occupation. And the way that we can even start this, you can start it, is defining yourself as what you are not. Because the first thing that they will do is label us as BDS. So first of all, we need to say it's not about BDS. Actually, what we are doing is, we are trying to do, is to make sure that Israel will not become pariah, and that to defend Israel from isolation and for losing its soul as a Jewish and democratic. So what we will do is starting in June, and then we will start with an art exhibition, with photo exhibition of the leading photographers who documented the occupation and documented the operations of Israeli and Jewish NGOs of trying to, like Geneva. Of course, there are other organizations that are there to support us and to work with us. And we will try to do it as bipartisan or multi-partisan, as in Israel we have more than two parties. Of course, everything is political. Of course, it's political. But we will try to impose it on the Labor Party and even on Yesh Atid. Some people from Yesh Atid, from Lapid's party, will have to feel very uncomfortable and apologetical if they will not join us. So this is the target. And what I have in mind is that at the same time that we will do our campaign in Israel, you will do a campaign, for instance, having people every day standing in front of the Israeli embassy, the Israeli consulate, all over the United States, doing media work, raising money, because, of course, it costs money, and bring up your own ideas. I lived for a few years in the United States, but this was a long time ago, and America has changed. And what we are expecting you is to come up with creative, active, aggressive ideas how to impose the struggle against the occupation on the Jewish community. Young people, older people, people who were not active, people who don't care, to make them feel that it's also about them, that they will have, if this will go on for another 50 years, Israel as a Jewish state will not exist. So this was the appetizer.
Thank you, Akiva. To clarify, the name of the game is visibility. Is that correct? So this is more about visibility of action than it is about education. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think that we don't have enough time to do education. We have to. We are talking about visibility, and we are not alone in this arena. We have the Israeli government, we have AIPAC, we have very strong, powerful, rich organizations that are going to celebrate the 50th anniversary.
I'm interested in knowing which particular groups you have already contacted and who are involved with this. What is this CISO, S-I-S-O, and who are they already?
Okay, CISO is Stop the Occupation. We are not coming up with new ideas about how to promote peace and new peace plans. It is to save Israel and stop the occupation. We already have on board the New Israel Fund, and we have J Street that are working with us on strategy. We have a very prominent group of people who are with us, former diplomats, former generals, people from the academia, leading professors. One of our first supporters, who also, the first one who wrote a check, was Professor Danica Hahnemann, whom I'm sure all of you know. We know that Peace Now are working on a big rally, so we are not talking about a one-shot or one, a big, another Rabin Square rally. As I said before, we are more like marathon runners. So we are, what we want to do is, for instance, to have, to start a Facebook page and have every week for 1 year, one of the 100 or one of the 50 leading Jewish and non-Jewish figures writing about the occupation. It can be musicians like Daniel Barenboim, and it can be scientists. We have leading scientists with us. It can be former diplomats, former ministers, and it can be, of course, we would like you to come up with big names of movie stars. I'm throwing names like Woody Allen, people who, Jerry Seinfeld, people who never spoke of and will say enough is enough. And we can't play business as usual. So we will be very happy if you send Maya an email asking to see the names of the people who are running this show. We will be more than happy to share it with you.
Yeah, this is Peter Eisenstadt. Two quick questions. Are you working at all with Israeli Palestinians or anything with the West Bank? I wonder how they're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Six-Day War or commemorating it. And second, there are two ways to end the occupation, either with, you know, a separate Palestinian state or some sort of one-state solution that would combine them. Are you open to both, or is the idea that the occupation can only be ended through a two-state solution?
That's a good question. Since we are hoping to bring on board as many people as we can, one status, two status, we don't care, as long as the message is to end the occupation, to get out of the occupied territories, whether we just leave, go back to the 67 lines, start moving out the settlements by passing this old bill that has been waiting of evacuation and compensation. There are so many peace plans. There is, I don't know if you heard about IPI, the Israeli Peace Initiative, that is trying to promote the Arab Peace Initiative. And it's going to be very imperative, of course, after the beginning of 2017, once we have a new president in the White House, that will need to listen. We have to impose him on him another voice that coming from Israel. It's not only Bibi Netanyahu. There is a large group of Israelis and Americans who are not willing to start counting until 100 years of occupation. So there are people among us who believe that the two-state solution is an old dream, that that the train has already left the station, and we need to work on a one-state solution. And there are people who believe that a one-state solution will not work, and it's either a two-state solution or apartheid. Because personally, I believe that the Israeli Jews will never voluntarily give up their hegemony.
Hi, I'm Elisa Becker, and I guess I have two questions, particularly related to work I've been doing and how it might relate to this. I've spent the last 2 years collecting the stories of U.S. peace activists since 1967, documenting the history of the activism here in the United States for the two-state solution, or in more recent times, for peace and justice. It would be more broadly defined. One is, has there been documentation of the movement in Israel? I know I have, there's a book by Mordechai Baron that just goes through 1993, I think. Is there an effort, is that story collected, and could something like this be part of, you know, you talked about photo exhibits and stuff like that, sort of remembering where we've been, since so many young people really don't know?
Actually, I don't know if you heard about our book, Lords of the Land, about the settlement movement.
Yes, I've read that.
Yes, so we were very surprised to learn that this is the first book about the settlement that was ever written. Since then, there were a couple of others. There is a book that there are some books who are written in Hebrew. One of them about the history of Peace Now, of Shalom Achshav. But I'm sure that there are some dissertations that were written about the peace movement. I know about at least one of them that was written about the four mothers. Actually, since correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a woman, right? So women played a very important role, the four mothers in ending the occupation in Lebanon, getting out of Lebanon. There was a group of women who campaigned, actually my wife was one of them, who were working on getting out of Gaza before Sharon did this. So there are dozens of, there is the family movement, the victims of terror, Palestinians and the Israelis. There are, as was mentioned before, the Combats for Peace. I think that our idea is let as many flowers to blossom. Let everybody do what he or she can do, whether it's a women organization, students organization, artists, you name it. What we are trying to do is to make sure that for 1 year, the occupation will be on top of the agenda of the Israeli and the American Jewish people. And we would like to hear from all of you how we can do this. And we will, what we will try also to do is to coordinate it as much as we can. So it will have a great impact. It will not be just one rally in Tel Aviv. It can be, if it's at the same day, at the same hour, we have a rally in Tel Aviv, in New York, in San Francisco, in Chicago, in Dimona, and in Kiryat Shmoneh, you name it, in Paris and in London, this is going to be huge. We try to do it. I try to do it with Aretz at the same time to have conferences, small conferences all over the country, but we were not able to raise enough money for that. And between us, I was also concerned that if we will end up with empty halls in the periphery, the media, the Israel Hayom media will have a party. So, and we knew we have only one shot, so we decided to wait another year.
I just wanted to first say to Aliza and also to Akiva that I have written a book, Our Sisters' Promised Land, Women, Politics, and Israeli-Palestinian Coexistence, which traces the history of some of the women's peace activist groups in Israel in the 1990s. Akiva's wife is one of them, of course. And to Akiva, I wanted to say that I find the message very important in terms of the Jewish communities here. It's very important to have a message that says we love Israel, and this is why we are approaching it, because mm-hmm. we love Israel and we want to defend Israel and save Israel. So in that respect, we have to really make a space in the local American Jewish community for the message, and for that the give and take would be wonderful, Akiva, if there would be a way to keep this alive, if we do Facebooks, if we start some action locally with the Jewish community that we can interface with you very easily and also give the message that we are supporting you and you from your side can feel supported here. Anything mm-hmm. you could add to it would be great.
Okay, we of course, once we will launch our Facebook page and start the campaign, we would like everyone, of course, to follow us and to make it lively and to have millions of people reading it every day. The other thing is that if you put one ad, even a full page like Danny Abram is doing in the New York Times, okay, it can be the talk of the day. But if you put on the front page of the New York Times, I know it costs a lot, every day an ad with few leading names of Jewish celebs for 1 year, and you have it for every weekend, I think that it has a much greater impact than one big ad in the New York Times. And then to do this, not only in the New York Times, but also in the Chicago Tribune, in the Los Angeles Times, in the Washington Post, and so on.
Akiva, hi, it's Lenny Grob. How are you, Akiva?
Hi, Lenny.
Hi. Akiva, I know this, that CISO is a movement for the people, and I know it's not political in the narrow sense of political, but I'm wondering what it will mean for political parties that at least talk about ending the occupation or are close to it. You mentioned Yesh Atid, and they'll be embarrassed. My question is, have there been discussions with Meretz, with the Zionist Union, with Yesh Atid at all to inform them of what's happening and to hear their responses?
Well, they know about us, but unfortunately, they keep away from everything that's most left. So if we want J Street and the New Israel Fund to join us and to support us, that means that Yesh Atid, that even Herzog, will take a step back. So we prefer, as I said before, that it will be a non-partisan, not a bipartisan actually, but a non-partisan issue. If they want to do something, because I'm sure that Yesh Atid and the Labor Party will celebrate the unification of Jerusalem with Bibi Netanyahu. They will, you know, they will be lining up to be invited to all the ceremonies and to the parties to celebrate the 50th anniversary of what they say, the liberation or the big victory. So it has, this coin has two sides. And if you take our side, that means that you don't take the official side, which is the Labor Party started all this between us. They were there in 67, and they started the settlement project. So they have a problem. The pictures of Shimon Peres and Rabin are all over the place, of planting trees in Ofra and so on. Just, you know, have a look at my book.
Is this being coordinated with Palestinians, or is this a Jewish, largely, I mean, I'm sure it's largely Jewish effort. What effort, how important is it to get Palestinian involvement in this?
Actually, it cannot be an Israeli-Palestinian campaign, because what we say, CISO, is Save Israel, Stop the Occupation. So it's about Israel, and we put a lot of thought into this. The Palestinians will do their job, and we know that they are working on it. They will go to the UN, they will do their own so-called celebration. But we think that we can be more effective if we speak about saving Israel's soul, saving even Israel's security, Israel's reputation, Israel's democracy, and so on. So if we mix it up with the Palestinian interest and we do it together with them, there will be more questions than answers.
Akiva, the exhibition you were talking about, is it possible to take it around the world or at least to the U.S.?
Well, it's all a matter of money. We have very prominent artists like Danny Calvan. Unfortunately, Kaddishman passed away. We have Micha Ullman. We have even artists that are working with us. And we are thinking about doing a kind of a cabaret. We are doing it in Hebrew, but if that's a good idea. If we have enough resources, we can also do this in English, and we can bring the exhibition to wherever we can afford to bring it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I did some fundraising for our conference, and one of the reasons that I decided not to do this in air is because I hate it.
I have a question or a suggestion. When I've been thinking about what's made some of the great topics of our time, whether it's abortion or the gun, etc., I think that the message that you create cannot be underestimated. And I would think that one of the things that the central people who are thinking about this have to figure out is some way to create a succinct message that you think is the most powerful, and then get that around to all the organizations that are going to be working on this, and that everybody should be on board with the same message so that we can flood whatever goes out, emails, you know, rallies, whatever happens, that this message is that people stay on point. And that is something that your, you know, you wordmeisters that are journalists and other writers that can mm-hmm. think of things that are catchy, that are quick, that are like something that can get repeated and repeated and repeated. And if you're, you know, for instance, if your main points are, you know, that the occupation is destroying Israel, and I heartily believe that we should go on the offense, not be on the defense, which is something you mentioned earlier, that this is what mm-hmm. the AIPAC, et cetera, you know, that the others are destroying, you know, BDS is destroying Israel or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be about BDS, but that we should be, you know, we should be more offensive and saying on the offensive and saying the others are destroying Israel. But there should be some way in which, you know, I don't think that most people can tell you why the occupation is destroying Israel. I mean, those of us who are very involved can rattle it off, you know, whether it's mm-hmm. democracy or whether it's the level of violence or, you know, all these things. But I think that there should be some quick way that you have, whether, you know, the top five reasons why the occupation is destroying Israel. Are you part of the destruction of Israel? And then you list one, you know, democracy is ending, violence is, you know, whatever these things are that are very specific and believable and have deep meaning that people can, like, have their aha moments. So mm-hmm. I think that this is something that you, like, need to work on as the core of your message in the way that, you know, the abortion movement said it was pro-choice. All of a sudden, yeah. it's a kind of whole nother meaning, choice. And it was like a big aha moment. And I think this is something
actually,
that we have to flood the communities with.
Actually, this is a good slogan, pro-choice. Are you in favor of the occupation and a one-state solution or apartheid or against it? And actually, our message is American Jews and Israelis, you cannot be a bystander. So you can't afford, it's a luxury that you
except,
can't afford.
Except to keep a why. I mean, the thing is that you have to say why. You can't just say you can't afford to be a bystander. It's not, so what? Bystander to what? I mean, what is it that the occupation is doing to Israel that makes it so awful?
Well,
so
I mentioned before.
Let's encapsulate that.
Yeah, because I think that this is something that is easier to explain to an American Jew who is, as far as I know, is most likely not to vote for Donald Trump, is that it's not only about settlements and occupation. It's about pro-choice. It's about democracy. It's about... it happens to be that we are on the same side of the reform movement because it's about pluralism. It's about the soul of Israel, and that if you want to feel that we have responsibility, you have to be a responsible adult. And a responsible adult cannot be a bystander when his son or his daughter is getting addicted to drugs. And what I think that my analogy of the settlement movement and the occupation is that Israel is addicted to the occupation, to the status quo, and to eat the cake and have it. And this is something, and as I mentioned before, the BDS is coming after us. So here we have a message. We are against the isolation of Israel. And for this, you have to stop the occupation. Occupation doesn't go along with democracy. It doesn't go along with Israelis being welcome. It's not even, it doesn't go along with fighting terrorism, with security.
Akiva, I just wanted to add something about what you said about the reform movement. I think this
yeah.
can be a very important and critical ally, and if it comes from you, as well as from us locally, they could be have an enormous impact on the American Jewish community.
Absolutely.
I don't know yet how to approach it, because even in the reform movement, it's not really clear that they are standing against the occupation. So something needs to be bridged here, but they are terrific allies in that.
Absolutely. And I think that we can find the common ground, which is pluralism. And pluralism
yes.
that can go along with occupation.
Have you been in touch with any of the leaders in the reform movement?
Actually, we know the people in Israel, but in Israel they are very marginal. You know that there are, according to the last poll that was done by Pew 2013, 3.8%, I think, of the Israelis define themselves as reforms, that they belong to the reform movement, and more or less the same amount of people define themselves as conservative. So in Israel, they don't make a difference. We have to work
with... Right, but in the United States, have you been in touch with the American reform movement?
No, that's exactly something that we would like you people to help us do.
Okay.
Hi, Akiva. I'm very glad to hear your voice, and I'm encouraged. I'm very happy to hear what you have in mind.
Thank you very much.
I think that American, you mentioned earlier the idea of maintaining a presence at the Israeli embassy. Maybe that would also be for the UN mission in New York. And I think back to the daily demonstrations at the South African embassy in the 80s, which actually involved civil disobedience, which might not be politic in this case, I'm not sure. But in any case, the dailiness of it makes it a story, and I think is a big help. But I also want to ask you, I'm looking forward to seeing the list of the honorables, but I have a concern about the predictability of the names who come out to take this view. I mean this with no disrespect, but there's a danger in many of our manifestations that we round up the usual suspects. And I wonder, do you have unusual suspects on that list? Are there, what efforts can be made to bring out not the reliables, not Darren, you know, I mean, no disrespect to Darren Aronblin, or, you know, Amos Oz and so on, Kahneman. But are there Mizrahi? Are there people who are renowned for being apolitical, or et cetera, who can be promoted into this operation?
Yeah, of course. If you look at the website today, you will see that even someone like Yuval Diskin, the former head of the Shin Bet, has defended breaking the silence. And he said that we need this kind of people. Israel's democracy cannot afford not to have those civil rights and human rights movement. This the best thing that can happen to us. Meir Dagan, who just passed away, I just wrote an article that will be available in a few hours, midnight Israel time, about, if you remember, his last speech was in March before the elections last year. And he said, I am not concerned about the enemies who are around us. I am concerned about the enemy inside us and this lack of leadership. And he said he's not afraid of terror from outside. He's afraid of lack of vision and of that we are our legacy to our children and his children and his grandchildren is apartheid or a one-state solution. He was the head of Mossad. He was a decorated general. So, and we have, you're familiar with the council, with the former commanders organization. There is a list of generals. But you said, you mentioned the usual suspects. They make BB's able to turn everyone to be a traitor if you don't fully agree with him. Not even, you don't have to disagree with him. If you don't agree with him, you're a traitor. So we need people who will be resilient enough to take, like Amos Oz, David Grossman, were targeted by Inter2 and those movements. And the Israeli media is cooperating with them. If they give them a good story, they will take it. So we need people who are willing to stand up and, as I said, to show resilience.
Okay, I'll ask the question for Morty. Morty Miller is asking, is there anyone from the Israeli labor union movement who is being approached, and does the occupation present a problem for the Israeli union movement?
We, as I said before, we are not starting with parties. They know about us. If they want to join us, they will be more than welcome. But Bibi will make it, of course, he will try to turn this into a political issue or a partisan issue, whatever I said. Of course, it's political. But if it's partisan, people will not believe us that this is on the merits. They will say, well, there will be rumors that we are planning to run in the next elections. We want to bring down the government, blah, blah, blah.
I think that Morty isn't asking about the Labor Party. He's asking about the labor movement, Igudei Ovdim.
Ah, Igudei Ovdim. That's a good idea. We we have the Istadrut, actually, the union. And the chairman of the Istadrut, the union, Nissan-Cohen, has joined the Labor Party, and it's becoming also a partisan issue. And the unions are, most of them, the big ones, are fully controlled, dominated by the Likud, members of the Likud Central Party. It's not what it used to be. It's not Mapai anymore. Now, the chair, I don't know any chairwoman of the unions, but all the big ones are active members, not just members, but active members. Take, for instance, the Minister of Welfare. He was the chairman of the largest union in Israel, of the aviation industry, and so on, of the Chevat Hashmal, the electric company, and so on. Now that I'm thinking about it, most of them are Likudnim, because this is where their interests are aligned. This is what they want.
I wanted to ask, most of us on this phone call are people who are 50 and older, and a lot of the people that are mentioned are also in the age category. And what have you thought about in terms of reaching people in their 20s and 30s and more of a young adult constituency?
It's a problem because there was an interesting book that was published recently by two sociologists about the Y generation. It shows that it will be very, very hard to engage them. Young people have been poisoned when they were in the army. Some of them have joined Breaking the Silence, but most of them are interested in business, in making more money, in buying new cars, and like the average American student, and how to return their loans to their parents and how to buy an apartment. And it was very disturbing that the only time that we saw 500,000 Israelis, and most of them young people, in the streets was against the price of the cottage cheese in 2011. And then two of them became members of Knesset, of the leaders, and they are not interested at all in the conflict, in the occupation, in the settlements. They drew a clear red line between those political issues and the cost of living, the prices of housing, and so on. But
Dr. Baer is speaking at the J Street conference.
Yeah, I know, because she got a free ticket.
Okay, thank you very much, Akiva, and thank you everyone for participating. Partners for Progressive Israel depends on your support. Though participation in this program is free, we kindly ask for a suggested donation of $10. Thank you very, very much, Akiva.
Thank you for your questions. It was very challenging, and there were some very good ideas that came up that we will discuss among ourselves.